Department of Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson will testify before the House Homeland Security Committee on the greatest perceived threats to our national security. Our next guest has written that unlike during the Bush era, today's threats have many more sources and may require many different kinds of responses. Gary Seymour is executive director of the Harvard University Belfer Center, formerly President Obama's coordinator for weapons of mass destruction, counterterrorism, and arms control. Welcome.
Thank you, John.
So it seems to me right now that the Obama administration is in a kind of a contradictory set of circumstances. There's the attempt to review the Snowden revelations and government surveillance there. There's now a renewed interest in addressing the terrorism threat from ISIS. Are all of these competing interests and worries compatible?
Well, since the end of the Cold War, when the U.S. doesn't face a single unified national security threat, the presidents have had to deal with an array of threats, including ones that pop up unexpectedly. Snowden's a good example. Even the rise of ISIS was unexpected. No one anticipated they would be able to capture Mosul, and that obviously has raised their profile on the president's agenda. So, you know, as powerful as the president is, in many ways, his agenda is dictated by circumstances, by events beyond his control, often beyond his perception of what's going to happen, and he has to respond to those.
Is there any discussion in your experience in the White House that, you know, one approach to terrorism is to just de-emphasize its threat capability? Certainly it's scary, but its fundamental threat and the likelihood that any individual American would be caught in a terrorist attack is extremely low compared to, you know, what went on during the Cold War.
Well, I think after the 9/11 attacks, which was, of course, a huge shock to the American system, I don't think it would be responsible for the president to downplay the possibility of additional attacks of that nature. Now, you're certainly correct that both President Bush and President Obama have been extremely successful in terms of preventing any further major attacks, although there have been a number of smaller attacks. But I think as long as there are groups out there with aspirations for carrying out massive casualty attacks against the United States and are seeking to acquire nuclear or other weapons, the president has a fundamental obligation to defend the homeland, and that requires that we sometimes have to be aggressive in going after those groups, even in foreign countries.
So more than 13 years after 9/11, as the Homeland Security Secretary testifies before the House, what do you see as the principal challenges and his responsibilities at this point?
Well, we've been talking about the threat from non-state actors, which are primarily extremist groups that claim to act in the name of Islam. And al-Qaeda obviously was the first manifestation of that. There have been many other manifestations, including al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, now Islamic State. I suspect that this will be a generational threat, that for a long time the U.S. and its allies will face violent groups who claim to act in the name of Islam. So that'll be an enduring challenge that the U.S. will face. And whatever diplomatic and, you know, military means we can use to contain or limit the threat, ultimately the solution to that really has to rest within the Muslim community. And that's not something we can very directly affect. The second sort of set of issues which will be enduring are continuing conflicts and tensions with other countries. We have a rising China, which I think fortunately the prospects for managing that competition over the next decade or so without conflict are pretty good, but that requires a lot of diplomacy and work. We now have a resurgent Russia, and hopefully we'll be able to find a political solution to the Ukraine crisis. We have the threat of nuclear proliferation from countries like Iran and North Korea, which is tremendously important, especially because it would threaten our allies in the Middle East and East Asia. And then there's a long sort of laundry list of non-traditional threats, which the president can't avoid, everything from, you know, from disease to natural disaster to the environment to questions of, you know, humanitarian intervention. So as I said, unlike the Cold War, where there was a single unifying threat in the form of the Soviet Union, the president now faces a real kaleidoscope of different challenges, and some of them cropping up unexpectedly, as we've seen with ISIL.
One of the things we haven't heard much about, and I wonder if you could assess it, is the notion of the threat of a dirty bomb or a nuclear weapon. Has that diminished in 13 years?
Well, when President Obama came to office, he recognized or believed that the threat of terrorist groups acquiring nuclear weapons was a very significant threat. And one of the signature efforts of his administration has been to organize nuclear security summits every 2 years in order to strengthen international efforts to secure nuclear materials. And there have been three summits so far, and the last one for his presidency scheduled for 2016. I think those summits have been tremendously successful in terms of reducing the risk of nuclear terrorism by strengthening security of those nuclear materials. But I hope that the next president will continue that process because, unfortunately, you can't rest on your laurels. You have to continually make efforts to monitor the security of nuclear material and facilities and strengthen them. But I would say since the end of the Cold War, where there was great concern about loose nuclear materials in the former Soviet Union, I would say all the presidents have put attention on the nuclear security issue, and I judge that the risk of nuclear terrorism has been reduced. But at the same time, there's a lot of nuclear material in the world that could be used for a dirty bomb or nuclear weapons, and there are still groups out there that would aspire to acquire and use it. So that's one of those threats that won't go away and has to be managed.
Well, on a guardedly optimistic note there, Gary Seymour, executive director of Harvard University's Belfer Center, formerly President Obama's coordinator for weapons of mass destruction, counterterrorism, and arms control, I want to thank you.
Thank you, John.
As Congress and the Department of Homeland Security discuss what constitutes a danger to the United States, we can see that the whole legal context of national defense may have radically changed in America to the point that we might be entering a real constitutional crisis. Here's just one telltale fact. A new Pew Research Center poll finds that half of Americans are concerned that the government's anti-terrorism policies, such as surveillance and police power, haven't gone far enough to protect the country, while only 35% of us worry that these policies have encroached on our civil liberties at all, and that's down from 47% last year. We turn now to Mark Tushnet, who's author of The New Constitutional Order and professor at Harvard Law School. Professor, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So do you think this is a constitutional crisis in a sense that we don't really know what constitutes privacy and civil liberties anymore?
No, I'm not inclined to think that. I think what's happening is that the American people are learning sort of new information about the nature of the threats to our own national security, and then taking that new information and thinking about what kinds of notions of privacy and the like seem appropriate to us.
Do you feel as though the Edward Snowden revelations, coupled with the barbaric ISIS beheadings, may have desensitized people to some of the more subtle questions of what constitutes privacy and government intrusion?
Actually, my inclination is to think that those two things sort of work in opposite directions. The Snowden revelations led us to understand how actually extensive the degree of intrusion and oversight by the government was. The beheadings lead us to think that we should accept somewhat more intrusive surveillance than we might have beforehand.
Do you think that these Pew Research poll numbers might be an invitation to Congress to revisit the issues in the Patriot Act, which was hurriedly passed after September 11th, 2001?
It seems to me that Congress should revisit those issues, mostly because the statute was passed, as you say, quite quickly, and it took quite a while for the American public to understand what Congress had authorized. The Snowden revelations helped us understand that. And now I think we could have a more informed discussion about what the possibilities are and how the technology works, the technology of surveillance works, so that we could assess what kind of surveillance we want to have and what kinds we think are too intrusive.
You know, and that raises an issue that our listeners often bring up on this program whenever we focus on this issue of privacy and the Snowden-like NSA surveillance. You know, a lot of people tell us that, you know, look, I have nothing to hide and I don't care if the government watches me. It's not a problem. I'd rather be protected. Do you think there's a way of having a notion of appropriate surveillance that doesn't violate the Constitution that would allow people to basically be under scrutiny of the government without it being a question of, constitutional, violation of search and seizure, that sort of thing, free assembly?
I think, yes, it clearly is possible to have such a system. Just as the most obvious kinds of examples, video cameras in public places, which are now quite common, I don't think raise any serious constitutional questions as a general matter. For me, I think the most troubling phenomenon is that technological developments are occurring so rapidly that it's very difficult for ordinary people to even know what's possible, much less know what the government's actually doing. And I think as a general matter, the government is going to push as far as it can in order to gain as much information as it can. And a lot of that will occur, at least for a while, without people really knowing what's going on.
The concerns of Mark Tushnet, who's author of The New Constitutional Order and professor at Harvard Law School, on the issue of privacy and policy regarding terrorism in the Middle East. Professor, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.